Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll check in on Super Tuesday tomorrow and what it means for Colorado. It's just one of the changes that voters in the state are experiencing, the chance to participate in the Super Tuesday primary. Then, just over a week ago, the Boulder Public Library hosted a gathering in celebration of the work of the Latino History Project. We'll get a report. On Resistance Radio, we'll hear from some of the advocates who recently gathered at the state capitol as part of the LGBTQ Advocacy Day. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, Rob Anderson, the superintendent of the Boulder Valley School District, joins us live in the studio to talk about issues in the district. Then at 9 o'clock, it is media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
A new study shows that Colorado officials have likely underestimated the emissions generated by the oil and gas industry along the Front Range. The research by Detlef Helmig at the University of Colorado Boulder takes issue with conclusions of the State Department of Public Health and Environment. In late 2018, the department said there was a dramatic decline in the ambient levels of oil and gas-related emissions as a result of tougher regulations and new practices by the industry. But Helmig told the Denver Post that nothing in the 50 studies he evaluated for his paper supports the agency's conclusion. In contrast, he said that studies strongly point to a very significant contribution of oil and gas emissions to elevated ozone conditions in the state. The data, according to Helmig, generally show that no change in emissions and perhaps even a slight increase. The nine-county area from Metro Denver North has been out of compliance with federal air quality standards for years. And in December, the Environmental Protection Agency downgraded the area from being a moderate to a serious violator. State Senate Majority Leader Steve Fenberg, Democrat of Boulder, is planning to introduce a bill in the legislature to provide money for research and expand air quality monitoring. The bill is based upon discussions with scientists, including Helmig and the health department. A federal judge in Boise, Idaho, has canceled about 1 million acres of oil and gas leases on public lands in three states that are home to the greater sage grouse. The Associated Press reports that the birds range across 11 western states, including Colorado, and have suffered population declines in recent decades due to development, disease, drought, and wildfires. The magistrate's ruling comes in a case that is part of a broader effort by environmentalists who are challenging the Trump administration's leasing practices within the habitat of the ground-dwelling greater sage grouse. The administration had instituted a policy that shortened and in some cases eliminated a 30-day comment period for oil and gas lease sales, but the judge found that the Bureau of Land Management intended to reduce and even eliminate public participation. Talasi Brooks with the Western Watershed Project said that the ruling is a real win for public process and transparency in federal decision-making. Any future sales of oil and gas leases greater than 100,000 square miles would require a longer comment period. A spokesman for the U.S. Department of Justice said they were reviewing the ruling and would not say if an appeal was planned. A conference that was expected to draw more than 10,000 people to Denver this week has been canceled because of concerns over the spread of the coronavirus COVID-19. The American Physical Society made the decision at the last minute on Saturday, even as some were either already in Denver or en route. The Denver Post reports that a spokesperson for the group said that it was not just their participants they were looking at, and they were concerned about the potential spread of the contagion to the Denver community. Many attendees at the conference were coming from other countries. The meeting was supposed to start today at the Colorado Convention Center, but about 800 had already canceled their attendance, many of those coming from China. University of Colorado students studying abroad in Italy learned this weekend that they'll be returning to the U.S. due to the concerns over the coronavirus. Henry Schuyler has more.
The students in Italy now join other CU students in China and South Korea in having their study abroad programs disrupted due to the virus. The Daily Camera reports that 192 CU students have been impacted and they have been transferred to new study abroad programs in Argentina, London, or Taiwan. They have also been given the option to return home and complete their coursework online. The latest decision was made by a campus-wide risk committee as cases of the coronavirus in Italy are up 50% just this weekend, according to CNN. There are now 1,694 confirmed cases of the virus and 34 deaths in Italy alone, the largest number of reported cases outside of Asia. Students who have been admitted to summer study abroad programs to countries affected by the virus have been left in the dark if their programs will take place. CU Boulder says they are prepared for whatever the coronavirus has in store and tells that they will continue to follow reports and recommendations from the Center for Disease Control for the safety of their students and community. The CDC recommends frequent hand washing for at least 20 seconds, staying home when sick, and limiting the amount of touching to the mouth and face when outside of the home to limit the spread of disease. For KGNU, I'm Henry Schuyler.
Longmont has been awarded $4 million from the federal government to help pay for the creation of railroad crossing quiet zones. The Times Call reports that the money will be spent on making improvements for establishing zones to prevent trains from having to blare their horns when they approach and pass through Longmont neighborhoods. A joint release from Democratic Senator Michael Bennett, Republican Senator Cory Gardner, and Republican Representative Ken Buck said that the rail traffic through Longmont has doubled over the past 10 years. The increase in traffic currently requires trains to sound their horns at 17 crossings that don't satisfy federal safety requirements. The federal grant will be used to install the necessary equipment to keep the trains from having to sound their horns and will need to be matched by funds from Longmont. In today's weather, there'll be some patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy and gradually becoming sunny with a high near 46. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 55. Right now, it's about 27. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Voters in Colorado will be weighing in on the presidential primary this year, much earlier than usual, as for the first time, the state is participating in Super Tuesday. As Lucy Haggard reports, it's not the only change in the process that we're seeing this year.
On Tuesday, March 3rd, Colorado will join 14 other states and territories in a push to nominate presidential candidates for this year's November election. The day marks the beginning of the final stretch for the United States 2020 presidential race. For Coloradans,
2020 is a really big year. We have three elections, the first of which is right now. It's the presidential primary.
This is Molly Fitzpatrick, Boulder County's clerk and recorder.
So in 2016, voters initiated two changes, the first of which was to switch from a caucus to a primary system for nominating president, the second of which was allowing unaffiliated voters to participate in primaries. And we haven't had a presidential primary in about 20 years, so this is a brand new election for many people.
These changes are a result of Proposition 107, which, as Fitzpatrick mentioned, Colorado voters passed in the 2016 election. Switching to a primary system, and an open one at that, can give a state like Colorado more influence in the nomination process, even though the state does not have a lot of delegates. It also opens the door for unaffiliated voters who can't participate in pre-election caucuses to get involved. As much as 40% of the state, and about a third of Boulder County, is registered to vote without any party affiliation. But wait, what happened to the Democratic and Republican caucuses? The primary is replacing them for the presidential race, but
the caucus is still used as a tool to nominate party leadership. So think of things like precinct captains. We are encouraging people to reach out to their parties for information on how to participate in the caucus.
Colorado's caucuses will occur this Saturday, March 7th. Before that, though, there's one more new thing for Colorado this election cycle.
17-year-olds will be able to participate in the primaries this year for the first time ever, as long as they'll be 18 by the general election.
This is Michael Carter, communications manager for New Era Colorado, which works to mobilize young voters.
So this is a result of a bill that we passed last legislative session called the Colorado Votes Act. So for context, there's 50,000 eligible 17-year-olds, and 26,000 of those 17-year-olds are already registered to vote. So we're trying to talk to as many as we can in person and, pass along this information. But sometimes even we'll see that young people just aren't as confident that, they know enough or they really want to spend a ton of time educating themselves about these issues because they take it really seriously. But they just need a little bit, of encouragement to say, you do know enough. You need to make sure that your voice is heard and that you actually show up in this election.
Speaking of voting, how do primaries work anyways?
Registered Democrats vote in the Democratic primary, and we send them a Democratic primary ballot. Republicans vote in the Republican primary, and unaffiliateds can vote in either party's primary, but the most important thing is that they only vote in one primary.
That's right. Unaffiliated voters only choose one ballot, even though they have options for multiple. And for the record, whichever party's ballot an unaffiliated voter chooses will get logged in a public database, but the specific vote itself remains anonymous. And on the note of election logistics,
there's a lot in the national discourse and in the national media about, you know, are our elections secure, are they not? And here in Colorado, we are working year-round to ensure that we are secure. And we did a overhaul of our election system in 2013. And security was really baked into many aspects of our model. And so, for example, everyone in Colorado votes on paper. And as you know, you can't hack paper. And we know that we don't want to let that create a false sense of security. And so it's absolutely a top priority for Boulder County and for Colorado, because we know that the threat is real and it's always evolving. And even though Colorado is a very secure state, we still want to be a leader given the threat and given the environment.
But wait, what happens if someone's preferred candidate dropped out? Can voters re-vote?
So once a person votes and turns in their ballot to our office and we receive it, that's it. We cannot give ballots back once they're in our office. If you have any doubts and you want to wait it out to see who stays in, hold your ballot. We do love early voters, but we also understand that things are changing very quickly right now. And the most important thing is that people vote and they feel like they have the information they need to make a great choice.
Many eligible voters haven't updated their registration to their current address, or they might not be registered at all. It might seem like it's too late, but luckily,
Colorado has same day registration, so you can absolutely do that. You can register to vote same day and cast your ballot same day. You don't need to be registered in advance.
For folks who haven't voted yet, it is too late to mail in their ballots. But there are other ways to vote.
The most important thing to know for drop boxes is that any voter can drop off their ballot regardless of which county it's from in any drop box in the state, and it'll get to the right place. And then we also will have drive-by drop-off locations, and we know that people enjoy the experience of actually handing their mail-in ballot to an actual human and getting that I voted sticker. And then we also have 5 voter service centers in Boulder County, and voter service centers are really one-stop shops to do whatever you need to do when it comes to voting. And we also have equipment for folks with a disability to utilize in those voter service and polling centers.
Voters have until 7 p.m. on Tuesday to cast their votes. To find more information, including drop box and polling locations throughout the county, go to bouldercountyvotes.org. For KGNU, I'm Lucy Haggard.
It is 17 minutes past 8 o'clock. The Boulder County Latino History Project began in 2013, and since then it's grown now to encompass the history of Latinos around the state. They recently held a celebration to honour the work of the programme. KGNU's Rosanna Longo was there.
Boulder Public Library hosted a special Latinx history event organized by Families of Color with the Boulder County Latino History Project. The speakers had the opportunity to share pictures and share their personal stories. One of them was Phil Hernandez, who shared past discriminatory stories and a recent racist experience in Boulder County.
I grew up in Boulder, attended the Catholic school, Boulder High, and the university. It's interesting, when I went to the university, I literally came through the back door because I entered the university from 19th Street. And if you're familiar with Boulder, it's a windy path to get onto the main campus. When I was in high school, none of us were advised or counseled about going on to higher education. And when we entered the university, we were academically prepared, but not philosophically in many ways economically prepared to compete on the campus. When we shared the stories of racism in Boulder, one of the reasons my family came to Boulder is because of less discrimination, better job opportunities, and better educational opportunities. Individuals can recall the white-only swimming pools in Lafayette, the signs, no Mexicans, no dogs, not only in Longmont, but also in Lafayette and Louisville. So there was a pattern of discrimination. You know, 50% of the miners in the coal fields were Mexicanos, yet they were treated very badly when they, you know, tried to go into stores, etc. Individuals asked, do you ever see any signs in Boulder? I don't recall any, but my uncle said there was a sign on what was 24th Street and now is part of Folsom. You know, racism in Boulder. My granddaughter had a problem when she was at Boulder High because she was a very quiet individual. The teacher automatically assigned her to English as a second language class. She's fifth generation American, U.S. citizen, and yet by the basis of the color of her skin, assigned her as an English language class. So, you know, that maybe that's 10 years ago. See, I don't have those recent stories because none of my children or grandchildren are in schools, but I'm sure that they're being repeated. That's why I sort of shared the story when I would talk, I was counseling an individual with his Medicare problem, and he didn't give me an opportunity to introduce myself. When I introduced myself, his response was, based simply on my last name, do you have a problem with Immigration and Naturalization Services, which was telling me he perceived me as a non-citizen, as a foreigner, somebody who doesn't belong in this country, even though I'm third generation. And, you know, the important thing is that we could say, as I said before, no harm, no foul. What if that individual was somehow a loan officer, a college administrator, a police administrator, etc.? How do we treat our communities? And it really was, in fact, a good sobering experience for me because it brought me back to saying, even though I've done all the right things, served on all the boards and commissions, and I think I'm valued as a citizen of Boulder, again, individuals who don't know me, but based on my last name and the color of my skin, perceive me as somebody who's foreign to this land.
What I would like you to make is like just a last reflection about the importance of continuing the labor of the Latino History Project. Why is this so important, and how can we keep on telling our stories so that people remember that we are not foreigners to this land?
That's important. There's a couple of things I'd like to mention. One, so many of our history not been valued by our own people. So when our grandparents die or our parents die, rather than collecting it and saving it, we dispose of it because it's not valued, which it should be valued. The second thing is that I think it's really important the institutions of higher education take an interest in the Latino community and begin rewarding people who perceive looking to get doctorate degrees and on the Latino history. And the other thing is that, you know, the institutions of higher education have got to look at our contributions as a people and the effect if we would suffer tremendous deportations. I didn't get a chance to share this figure, but one-third of the Mexican population in the United States was deported during the 30s, 20s, and 30s, and 40s. One-third of the population. So that had a tremendous impact, not only our community, but in fact, a tremendous impact on the American economy. And in fact, I saw some literature that indicated that the deportation actually had a negative effect on the American economy. But we need researchers who are going to bring forward this data so we can be valued in this country. Because some of the policies that are being brought forward by this administration will not only damage our community, but will damage the American economy as well.
Carmen Ramirez, a community member from Longmont, was part of the Latino History Project since the beginning.
So we started with part of the Latino Task Force, this question about where is Latino history. We started with an ally, the retired professor from CU, history professor, who today was recognized for all of her work. And I think she exemplifies what it means to be an ally, not leading in front of people, but bringing the stories of the very same people forward and putting them in the schools. And now the exciting part is that Jason Romero is going to be the new director. He's going to continue to take that on, and not only in Boulder County, but throughout the state of Colorado. He's working with communities, Latino communities, so they can be the storytellers of their own story.
Storytellers of their own story. We had a presentation today that really touched me. It was a gentleman, Phil Hernandez, and he shared his personal experiences of racism, told us about something that happened in the past, but something that happened recently. What are your thoughts about that, Carmen Ramirez?
Well, I think the issue of racism is one that is not just something that is in the past. It continues in a daily basis. It continues in different forms. And it is why we need to be educated about the history, the true history, not just the history that sometimes is written and told. We need to learn about our native history. We need to learn about our history of the communities of color within every community, because the makers of the history books sometimes aren't very inclusive. And then that's the way that we hopefully begin to learn to not continue that ignorance and that racism.
And now the person who's going to take this project, this Latino History Project, forward is Jason Romero. Would you speak about him?
As the young person from CU who came, one of those first college and high school students that came forward to begin to discover stories, to me it's very impressive that he's part of that next generation. He has completed his education. He's a teacher, which I think is so crucial that Latino students will see students like themselves. He's a young man from Pueblo. He's got his own history story, but now they'll be able to continue that, and he'll be able to continue to plantar semillitas de orgullo, semillitas de riqueza, semillitas de historias that are part of our Latino community.
For KGNU, Rosana Longo.
Jim Hightower has been rabble-rousing and offending the powers that be on KGNU for years.
Agitation is what built America.
He recently came to the Front Range and spoke on fracking, food and fellowship to an enthralled audience at the Longmont Museum. And of course, Hightower weighed in on the 2020 election.
And I can tell you from political experience in Texas, I know that if you take the corporate check, written on the back is the corporate agenda.
If you weren't lucky enough to hear Jim in person, don't despair. We'll be airing the talk from Longmont on Wednesday, March 4th from 8:35 to 9:30 a.m.
We've got to stay strong, recognize the strength that we have.
Tune in then for a special hour of Jim Hightower, Wednesday, March 4th, 8:35 to 9:30 a.m. right here on KGNU. We do hope you'll join us for that as we kick off our spring fund drive. So many special programs ahead. You can find out more at kgnu.org. Well, it's time now for Resistance Radio. Recently, LGBTQ advocates gathered at the state capitol for the annual Advocacy and Lobbying Day with state lawmakers. Well, one of the people who was there was Jude. Now, last year, Jude helped pass legislation that now bears their name. Jude's law was passed by lawmakers in 2019, and it's named for Jude, who's a young transgender student who testified on the bill 4 years in a row before it was ultimately passed last year. And the bill allows transgender and non-binary Coloradans of any age to have accurate, reflective identification documents. Now, that means that transgender and non-binary Coloradans can update documents like their birth certificate, their driver's license or a state identification with the options male, female or neither male nor female and mark X. And it gets rid of requirements of surgery, a doctor's note, a court order and newspaper public publication to make the document changes necessary. Well, KGNU's Yvonne Crumry caught up with Jude and Jude's mom when they were at the state capitol recently, and she asked them what it meant to have the support of the community when they were working for so many years to get the legislation passed.
It meant a lot. I think at that time it can be really hard, confusing time for people, because that's when you really are getting a better understanding of who you can trust and who's supporting you and where your support system kind of lies. And the fact that my family was willing to change where we were going to move, because we were already planning to move, but not to somewhere that was very safe for me. So we moved up to the Boulder area and we love it. So meant a lot.
That's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Jenna.
Yes.
As Jude's mom, what experiences did you have when she came out?
I had many different feelings. So when Jude shared with us, I feel more like a girl than a boy. The first feeling was I don't understand, was my truth. And I had never known or met a transgender human before. And so I had to learn, like I think many other parents have to learn. And I also had to accept where I was at in the process. And like Jude's process and a parent, like the child's process and the parent's process are very different, right? Like we're both going through very different things. I will never understand what it's like to be a transgender person. Just like at the moment, Jude doesn't know what it's like to be a parent of a transgender person, right? So we were able to really, it's been such a beautiful journey with Jude, and we've been able to learn and grow together through the process. And I think that's been the gift in our family. And I think that's what's kept us close.
Well, we can hear more from Jude and Jude's mom and many other folks who were at the Capitol recently on Outsources this evening. Yvonne Crumry will be the host and bringing us other voices as well. That's from 6:30 to 7 p.m. right here on KGNU.